Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
We'll be right back. Yeah, you got to get to that last.
That last. The unplugging.
The last glitch. Beep.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last glitch. That was Noel Sleep, who will be playing live in studio later today. Welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz.
The other half, Darren Bresnitz.
And this is Snacky Tunes.
It's sort of gross out today. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it's like...
a little muggy.
Yeah.
A little humid. Not even a little, just a whole lot, a lot. Yeah. I need to shout out two meals I had this week that were just fantastic. Spraga. Shout out to Kevin Spraga and his team down in Philly. Amazing. And then Brooklyn Brewery was doing the Nord Festival, which was... They brought over a bunch of people from the Nordic lands. And on Thursday night, they had a dinner with the brewer... the chef brewer in Stockholm and Andrew Garrison from Brooklyn, and it was insane. They had all the beers from the new Stockholm brewery, and my glass was never empty until I left.
And I'm glad you're still standing.
Oh, I'm sitting. Okay. I'm in full sit mode today.
So fall at Heritage always means we get a host or a bunch of new shows. A myriad, if you will.
A harvest. A cornucopia.
Oh, yeah. I like harvest.
A flock.
A flock.
Of new shows, and we always like to take time to spread a little love to the new part of the family. So, Talia, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Oh, I feel so warm and fuzzy. Thanks for having me, guys.
Congratulations on starting a new show, Pizza Party, which...
Very apt.
Very apt.
Yeah.
And very close to our hearts, our slowly hardening hearts after 5 years of pizza. Welcome. How are you?
I'm good.
How was your time at the Climate March?
It was great. It was really exciting.
HRN is there live doing recording and interviews on the streets, and they should be coming out on the new HRN SoundCloud. News SoundCloud.
Yeah, so make sure to check out
the homepage. Check out the homepage. You do.
They're saying 312,000 right now, and that's unofficial count, which is insane. I was there earlier too, and it's just like,
can we just say half? We can round up to 500,000.
That's a big. That's a.
Come on.
That's a big. Bit that's of a leap.
Big. 200,000 is a big jump.
What are you, a non-believer in?
In climate action?
I could say like 375. I'll give it 375.
Fair. Come
on. I'll give you that.
So Talia, before we get to your show,
how'd you get... So we have something in common. Canadians. We're half.
Oh,
but together we equal
wow.
a whole, and you're a whole Canadian.
I'm a whole Canadian.
But Jeremiah, where are you from?
I grew up here in New York.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
which is close.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It's a few hours to Canada.
It's nothing.
It's not bad. So what kind of Canadian are you guys?
Montreal.
Well,
I would be French Canadian.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same
to you. I mean, this is a straight up hockey tattoo of my dad.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you're full Canadian.
It's a really good visual for the radio show. Yeah. So you grew up in Montreal. What was that like? Did you eat like Schwartz's and Saint Vator, or do you Fairmont or Saint Vator?
Saint Vator, but neither. Sorry.
But neither.
I was a real bagel family. We lived like around the corner from Real Bagel, so that was...
Real Bagel?
The Ralph family. You guys don't know Real Bagel? Okay,
no.
Clearly you're half. Your half is showing.
It's not the seeded half either.
Shots fired.
It's like the black poppy seed twisted out the oven. Yeah.
Yeah, we were a sesame family.
Okay. I'm a sesame person, actually pumpernickel now. But yeah, the goal is to eat them as hot as possible. Yeah. So it's just like a proximity thing. Like that was the closest one.
Oh, I see. Hot dozen?
A hot dozen.
Yeah. Real bagel. I guess we'll have to add it to the list when we go up.
Yeah, but I've never heard.
Schwartz's, all that stuff?
Schwartz's, yes. My family was addicted to Schwartz's, like overdose when I go home. I've largely stopped eating meat, but like that's one of my few exceptions. You can't not.
I walked by a Ben's. In New York, like in thing that was like a Hebrew, a Jewish deli called Ben's, and I like there's no connection to the Ben's that was in Montreal, right?
No, Ben's in, I don't even know if they make. I've double checked. I know that they don't make all the products. Like a lot of it's Hebrew National stuff, but it's a glatt kosher Jewish deli.
Got it.
It's been around forever in the fashion district, right?
Yeah. Got it. Interesting. So how did you end up here?
Well, tell us about Montreal. Tell us about some cuisine you ate growing up. I mean, was your family Quebecois?
No, my family is like the English minority in Montreal. Mm. Super Jewish, just straight up Eastern European.
Oh, one of the tribes.
Yes, in the tribe. So lots of matzo ball soup,
fantastic.
Lots of chicken. Like we ate out at a few places that were not at all trendy places. I mean, Moishe's,
Gibby's
Steakhouse.
Moishe's Steakhouse is like Classic.
It. Yeah. So those are the two big ones. Also, Da'u. I don't know if you guys have ever been there on Saint Laurent. Like, really good Lebanese food. Just, like, kind of empty. Wait, is it, big tables.
It's not the one next to Schwartz's, right?
No. It's, like, you got to drive. It's, like, off the 15.
Okay.
That, for whatever reason, was, like, a big thing in my family. But, no, my mom and my grandma's cooked a lot. And it was, like, a...
Oh, Jewish mother and grandmother that cooked a lot in Montreal?
So typical. So I mean, typical. I don't know how far you want to talk about this.
But drop a little. What did grandma and mom used to make?
Well, I have yet to find. I'm actually struggling because I love Mile End. Like, I love Noah and Ray and everything they do. But
who doesn't?
Their matzo ball soup doesn't do it for me. And neither does Veselka's. And neither, like, I can't find a matzo ball soup that rivals...
I just went
is
to
it the matzo ball, like, or is it the broth?
Both. Like, the matzo balls are too dense. They're not fluffy enough. And they're not salty enough. I had to ask for salt at Mile End, and they were so mad
you're
at me.
You're in trouble.
And like, I was so embarrassed. But
usually,
like,
it's Shonda. Usually it's Shonda, like, one or the other. Say. Like, the broth is fine, but like, but if you're at 0 for 2, you're just...
Both. And, like, something about the vegetables are weird. I don't know.
Jack's Wives Frida does an okay one. They have a lot of dough. But it's really dense.
Okay. I'll put that on my list. Right now, I'm very focused on pizza. Like, I've sort of ignored my...
So let's how did you, before you got, how did you get into the, besides eating every day, get into food and the food world?
I actually, when I think about it, I credit it a lot to my family. Like, I always took for granted that people just sat down to, like, multi-course, really intense meals most nights of the week.
Same.
I thought that was the normal thing.
So did
we. And then I went away to college and I, like, met my Italian friends are the only people I met whose families go harder than my family goes.
I feel like Jews in
they go hard
Italian
in the red. What? They go hard in the red.
I got it. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah.
That's okay.
I grew up around cooks. I went to Italy as a 16-year-old, as like a super lucky, spoiled 16-year-old. My nana took me to Italy for my 16th birthday and learned how to make, like, homemade pasta and, like, rabbit ragu and all this. I think that's what sort of tipped me into being like, wow, this is...
That's pretty amazing.
Magic.
Thanks, Nana.
Yeah, Nana.
Nana.
Go
shout
Nana.
Shout out if she's listening. She probably will listen.
Yo,
to
Nana,
me.
Shout
she's
out.
Pretty up on our food radio.
We have a Jewish grandmother so alive that's on my dad's side, and she's this Hungarian master chef, and it was like cholent and fried chicken and veal. And then when she made fried chicken and fried veal, she would just make fried breading. Like, all the leftover breading would just, like, a fried disc of breading.
That was obviously your favorite thing.
Yeah, but we had the same thing. It was always like, we sit down at the dinner table, we have a salad, we have a main, we have something at the end. And we're like, oh, this is how everyone eats. And then you go out in the world and...
It's a dark place.
It's a dark sort of, like, hillock brown sort of place of, like, grab and go.
Yeah.
Did you desire, though, growing up, that... Because we rarely... Unless we were going to, like, a Flyers game, we would ever get, like, McDonald's or something like that. Did you have the same dreams of going, like, I wish I had?
I was lucky. I do have, like, a lingering obsession with American chain food because of this. Like, we would, again, like, you might be falling asleep because my Jewish experience is so typical. Like, grandparents in Florida, so we would drive down, me and my two brothers in the back seat. My dad used to wedge a television in between the front seat with a video cassette underneath. So
that is not typical.
Wait, you would drive the Montreal
to Florida. 3 days.
We would drive
you can't even
to
top
Montreal.
It. Philadelphia, Montreal.
No.
She's laughing at you.
No.
Your distance is nothing.
No, because I remember when we would get up, like, oh
like
my God, we got to get up at 5 a.m. and then we're going to be there, like, for dinner. That's we are nothing.
Yeah. No, you don't know. I mean,
your diaspora. quite intense.
The treks that the Ralph family would take would be epic. So we would stop. Like, those would be the big treats. Like, I remember Cracker Barrel being really exciting.
Dude.
Olive Garden, I still get excited about that. I get very judged by lots of Americans
because they think it's disgusting. Yeah, eat now.
What's that new thing they have? Like $1,000 all you can eat pizza? I mean, pasta? It's something
gross.
Yeah,
the passes that sold out. Like, unlimited all you
can eat. So gross.
I would be in for one of those.
Cracker Barrel still gets a pass by some food people.
Does it?
They're like...
I think it's because it's more considered a Southern thing.
It's not.
I know, but...
I ate there recently.
And you bought a
rocking
chair?
On a road trip. It was disgusting. No, it was really sad. It, like, childhood dreams dashed all over the floor
because
I always thought Cracker Barrel was, like, it. And I went and got the chicken and dumplings, and they were not good.
That's the way the cracker crumbles.
Yeah, it
crumbled. So how did you move into family Jewish trips down to Florida into the illustrious world of radio programming.
Wait, no, hold on, wait a second.
What happened in between my Florida trips and radio?
You skipped a lot. So when did you leave, where did you go to Montreal after you turned 18?
I did my undergrad in Boston at Emerson.
Oh, I was at BU.
Oh, cool.
What years were you there?
2007 to 2011.
Yeah, I'm way fucking older than you.
Sorry. Okay.
It's cool. Did you get it on a Sakuria?
Yes, all the time. I lived in Central Square for 2 years, so it's all the central spots.
Literally the only thing I miss about Boston. I don't miss...
I've been getting a lot of hate on Boston today, and you know what? I defend it. I actually miss it. I might go down there next weekend.
Well, thanks, Tali, for swinging by. I really appreciate it.
I have to just chime in to say I hate Boston, too.
Yeah. Because you're all hardened New Yorkers. Like, I haven't lived here long enough to harden against a good city that's just...
Before I even left it. Like, I graduated and I was gone within 12 hours.
Oh, I left it too. Immediately, please. Like, drove away, did not look back. You always want to leave.
Do you have that one friend who's still there, who, like, got a job in Boston? Like, hey, guys, come visit. And everyone's like,
I have two of my best friends still there. They both do really cool stuff.
So you went to Emerson. What'd you study?
Journalism.
Very nice.
And then I moved to California for a year, to L.A., because I thought that would be fun.
So you went from one shitty pizza town to another shitty pizza town.
Yes. The pizza in L.A. is shitty, but I lived in East L.A., so I was near Two Boots, and I was near a great place called Masa, which did, like, a Chicago deep dish-esque. I don't know if you guys know it.
Are you a souffle? Fuck you, Chicago pizza.
I need to have a Chicago pizza episode because that's another thing people have been throwing very strong opinions at me about.
If you want a pie and then throw tomato sauce and cheese on it, we could do that, but don't call it pizza. Hey,
yeah, it's not pizza. It's good when it's done right, but it's not pizza.
Oh, when I'm in the mood for whatever you want, what that is, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah. A quiche.
Let me get a Chicago quiche. Yeah. Wait, you know, I totally skipped over it. What was Montreal pizza like? Because we had... Where was it? Was it in Vancouver? Like, 99-cent pizza was really big, like, 10 years ago before it even made it out
was
here.
Was it good?
I don't know. We were 20, so yes.
So no, it tastes like cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it tastes absolutely like cardboard.
But Montreal pizza?
Montreal pizza, we have a few really good spots. My dad has actually been, like, nonstop being like, you have to come to Pendelli's. Pendelli's was where we would always order from on Queen Mary Road. Côte Saint-Luc Road. Oh, my God, my Montreal geography. But they would do these giant dough balls in the middle of the pizza, and they would, like, kind of put it on before it was finished. So you'd get this, like, the dough balls were really, like, hot property in my family, and I had two brothers, and we looked for any excuse to fight about anything. So we would fight over these. It was just like they'd roll a little bit of dough and, like, put it in the middle.
I love it.
So my dad would get extra ones, so that fight ended.
I mean, is that different than a garlic knot?
Yes, it's just the dough.
Were they using it instead of, like, the little plastic thing that, like...
I think so.
That's ingenious.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, because it would touch the top of the box.
I like it.
Hey,
I like it.
You're reading between the lines
here. No, it's like, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah.
I never question what it's for.
Oh, my God. I have to sit down even more.
Yeah, imagine if you could eat those little white tables.
That's how she grew up. You're talking about her childhood.
I heard a rumor that a woman created those little pizza table things, and she patented it and gets a penny per.
No way.
Hey,
Darren.
Listen, I don't use the internet.
Let's get on Snopes.com and check that out.
Anyway, so she's doing all right.
Yeah. Yeah, better than a lot of us.
So you were in California, and then the siren called pizza.
The siren. Well, there was a year in Montreal, which was not by choice because immigration laws are weird. That's another thing you probably don't want to talk about. No. But yeah, so then
today on Snacky Tune, Montreal Canadian versus American immigration law relationships.
You know, I would love a show on that. But so moved back to Montreal, did a lot of, like, traveling and bouncing around, and then decided that maybe I wanted to go to grad school. So I'm actually here studying food systems at NYU. That's my day job, and my Thursday afternoon job is pizza party.
All right, well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to pizza party, and then all the writing that you do for Munchies and HRN as well, and maybe some other... We'll talk about some other, like, Montreal insights that maybe we don't know about. So quick question. If you were to have a sham green card marriage, what type of pizza would you serve?
Oh, my God. Definitely Roberta's. Have them, like, pull up the truck, do the oven. I have been super, super into the tasty flavor, which is a kind of controversial choice because there's no cheese on it. But I like capers, olives, like anchovies, like all of those really pickled, salty things people don't like because fuck it, it's my sham.
It's your green card wedding. It's your so let's talk about the program you're in for grad school.
Sure.
Tell us about it.
Food studies is the oldest such program in the country. It's been around for a whole 20 years. And it's really interesting because people tend to think when you say you study food that you're either in culinary school or nutrition. Mm-hmm. And it's like everything except for those two things.
Sure.
Like, we do have a cooking class. We do have a required nutrition class. But it's very much, like, the issues and social implications of every aspect of food. It's super interdisciplinary. So we have a professor from literally almost every big academic discipline. I mean, it's a pretty small program, but we have an economist. We have a sociologist. We have a political scientist. And they're all looking at food from these different perspectives.
So today's march was like very apt for what you're into.
Super apt. And yeah, someone in our program, like, I'm thinking about it a lot. We just had all the new students come in and had a panel of people that were sort of like explaining what it's like to be in the program, because people are come into it from such different angles. We have a lot of chefs, we have lawyers, we have people that worked in like food science. And she was saying that you kind of have to be like you have to explain to people what it is, and you have to be an advocate for it because it's still this new thing that academically and socially people don't think is important, and it's so important. You sort of have to like force people. And it was great that they carved out a section in the march for food justice and recognized the fact that like that's a huge part of climate change.
Yeah, I think that when some people walked by the climate change when they saw like voting like migrant workers and fast food, like fair wages, that people probably went, huh? But, what? Like, don't, maybe it's, like, not as connected, but it's, like, very, very much part of the overall issue with climate. And, you know, if those get solved, you know, it can fix a number of things, or at least bring a fair monetary system to areas that are not discussed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even food studies as a, you know, academic space, and just, you know, the idea of sustainability and, like, what good food is, that is new. And people are still sort of, like, wrapping their minds around things like the minimum wage as being a part of that. But
yeah, I mean, because yeah, they get paid better, they can eat better, put their money towards things, stop the cycle. Yeah. From your program, where do people generally end up getting jobs?
That's a great question. A lot of people, I'm on the system side, so it splits into like systems and culture. A lot of the systems people end up doing policy work or nonprofit. I mean, we have such an amazing network of organizations here in New York. Like, I have lived in a few cities, as you guys can gather, and like never have I been somewhere that there's so much action going on around food. I mean, Montreal has like some great Meals on Wheels and food banks. Obviously, we have farmers markets, but it's like insane here. So actually, one of the people in our program is the new director of Just Food, Jasmine Nielsen, which is pretty cool. We have some people that go on to like law school. A lot of people end up in media.
Heyo.
Writing about food, talking about food, restaurants, sort of like management. A lot of entrepreneurs, actually, like a lot of people starting businesses. I don't know if you guys have had Donna Chai. There's a girl in our program that like started making local Brooklyn chai, which like you hear about, you know, fair trade tea and local coffee spots. And like there's this whole great coffee culture, but like there's no local chai, and she is now like the local Brooklyn chai girl, and she's all over the place. That was her senior thesis, and she's selling at like Smorgasburg and all of these cafes. Wow. And it's legit.
So what aspect drew you to the program?
I am a journalist, and so my problem, my greatest weakness and greatest strength, is that I think almost everything is interesting, and I really loved that you could get a little taste. But a bunch. Thanks, guys.
A little borscht belt humor coming at you.
Yeah, just like how broad the program was.
Speaking of being a journalist, let's talk about your radio show.
Sure. What do you want to know?
Tell us about how you fell in love with pizza and why you felt it merit. I mean, okay, we all know it merits at least half an hour a week.
Yes, thank you.
But why did you feel that you were the voice of our generation to bring it to us? And when do you remember your first slice of pizza?
My first ever slice of pizza or my first New York slice of pizza? Different question.
First ever slice of pizza.
It was probably at a birthday party at like a bowling alley in Montreal, and it came on a paper plate. It might have even been square, actually, like one of those big party square slices. Obviously no toppings. But I can't pinpoint an exact slice, which is sad. I should lie.
No, it's fine. when was the first pizza you had where you're like, I love you. I love you, pizza.
Not to be a suck up, but it probably was Roberta's.
Oh, total suck up.
Womp. I'm kind of a suck up by nature. No, I mean, like, I just always thought of pizza as like food you buy to feed a lot of people very quickly and easily and cheaply.
That's one of the things you can love about it.
Right. But it's not, you know, it's not that special, oh my God, I am obsessed with you moment. And I think Roberta's, I mean, I moved here, I came here like 2 weeks after I moved, and I was like, these people are doing something.
This is something special.
Yes.
This is something a little bit different. When was that?
That was last fall. Mm.
So. I mean, there's no donuts.
Donuts on them.
Yeah.
But I can't fault them for that.
No.
It's like not everybody can be doing that kind of thing.
No, but maybe through your initiatives and your hard work, petitions.
Yes.
I'm sure you'll learn.
I definitely want a political aspect to Pizza Party, and so we will start
distributing.
I expect
petitions. To see the donut protests of 2015 also come to Roberta's front doorstep. It is a very important issue that it's facing our.
I expect you guys to sign it. I expect
absolutely.
To be the first signatures.
Yeah. So then take us through the journey of that first bite of pizza where you went, oh shit, this is. Not just pizza, but pizza with a capital P, to starting your radio show.
You know, I really love talking about things that people overlook, but that I think are actually really important and significant. And I think that pizza is one of those things that's actually coming from like a theory that's been building in my classes, where like it's all very fascinating, but I haven't found like a firm thing to like lay all this academic and like sort of heady theory on like feminism and class and like city spaces, and pizza is my, like, I think pizza is strong enough to like stand the burden of being this really interesting.
Give me the pizza feminism argument.
Okay, well, you guys, right, I don't want to like spoil too much because I'm gonna have
tease the episode.
I'm having an episode about pizza feminism, but there was a great article in the Hairpin last week about Snackwave. Did you guys see this?
Nope.
It's basically an argument that online, like in pop internet culture, which is now a thing that we just deal with, there's a very strong trend of women, specifically and teenage girls, being like really down with snack food, like really about like, you know, like love dies, pizza is forever. Like, I'm sad, but at least I have Oreos. Like, this very strong undercurrent. And it's kind of a joke, obviously, and it's a certain kind of like internet personality, but it also points to this sort of like rejection of what women are supposed to like to eat and how we're supposed to eat.
Totally got it.
And pizza is like sort of at the epicenter of that. It's like, I'm going to have a whole pizza to myself. Fuck you guys. Like, don't tell me how to eat. Don't tell me what to do. And I think that that's a really fascinating part of it. I think there's a lot in terms of like,
oh my God.
What are you looking
at? I'm looking it up. Holy crap. Okay, just for those who, you should go look this up. The image is a Mac laptop, half closed because it is stuffed full of pizza on top of magazines.
There's many great images of you.
Oh my God. okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is definitely good.
So, I mean,
I guess it's a little. I get that what that is, but it's just, I think being around women and working in food and things like that. Most women I know eat as much as they want, whatever they want.
That's an interesting theory. I mean, I can neither confirm or deny. I know that I try and eat whatever I want, but I still do have, and I'm like just coming off reading some stuff for my gender and food classes. It's very much in my mind, like there's still this kind of battle that women have in their heads about, you know, should I eat this? Am I taking care of myself? How am I, you know, being perceived? I think men do it too. I think with women, it's just more talked about, and we're a little bit more overt about the fact that we do it.
I struggle every time they say salad or french fries. To this day.
Yes.
It's a real moral choice for me.
But
every time they go salad or french fries, I feel like I'm saying
the
something
about
myself.
The answer is french
fries.
Unless I had french fries earlier in the day, the answer is always french fries.
It's a very masculine gendered thing of you to say.
Yeah.
How is that a masculine? Yeah.
Really?
We don't have enough time to really get into it, but yeah, Greg.
Yeah, sorry, Greg. I worked at Food 52 this summer, and we would, I mean, people at Food 52 know how to cook plain and simple, amazing food. They would order Suprema for our company meeting sometimes because it's just that good. Any slice you have there.
Okay. They have this sweet and savory tomato jam recipe that's bonkers.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much. You can hang around. You got those two slices are yours, by the way.
Oh, okay. I'm going to go for them.
So we got Nalsi coming up live.
So good.
So good.
That 8-minute epic Nancy Wang track is also awesome.
Yeah. Jeremiah, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Tell us, well, we know you're from New York, but tell us where Null Sleep began.
Where Null Sleep began?
Yeah.
I guess it was when I did my undergrad at Columbia, and freshman year there is when I started writing music. I've been interested in electronic music for a long time, but that was when I started, and it was actually a direct result of having access for the first time in my life to high-speed internet and being able to download pirated software to make that music. And actually, the name Null Sleep was not originally like an artist name that I came up with. It was actually like the name that I used on IRC and when trading files with other people online. And then I just sort of, it became the name that I used as my online presence. And when I started releasing music, it just sort of carried over to that.
Did you know how to write music before you had the software?
No, the only musical training I had up to that point was I took like a few weeks of cello lessons when I was like in elementary school. Oh,
the classic, like, let's try this out. You're like, fuck this.
Yeah, it was actually, I don't know if any of you remember this movie called Electric Dreams, but it was a movie from the 80s about like a guy who buys like a computer, and the computer has like a built-in AI, and then the computer and the guy both fall in love with the same woman who lives next door, and it's basically like a love triangle between the guy, the girl, and his computer.
What year is this?
Some early 80s, okay. I think. And the soundtrack was amazing. It was like a bunch of electronic music, Giorgio Moroder, Human League.
Wow. It's like one of those movies where like it tapped into this weird subculture.
Yeah,
at the time.
It was. And the actual movie, the look of the whole movie is amazing because it looks like an Apple commercial from that time. There's like lots of shots that look very much like 80s like Apple branding.
Amazing.
But that was that actually was the reason why I took cello lessons, because there's a scene in the movie where like there's this amazing like duet between the computer that's writing this like crazy bleepy stuff and then the woman who's playing a cello, and it was, I forget what piece it was, but it was, it just sounded amazing, and I ended up taking cello lessons because of it. When really I misdirected myself. Right. I was supposed to make music that sounded like the computer, and that's what I'm doing now.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's like how the way like hackers affect a lot of people, like who had never heard of like techno, and they got hackers, and they like, well, I'm going to dive into each track on the soundtrack.
Yeah,
very much so. I think yours is a bit of a deeper dive. Oh, who was in the movie?
I actually don't. No like big names.
Yeah.
Like there were. I think the woman has been in some other things, but the male lead, I don't even remember from anything else.
Has that the music for the movie inspired your music?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, there, like Giorgio Moroder is has been an influence ever since, just like the sort of Italo disco sound and like heavy sort of synthesizer based music production. And same with Human League. But yeah, it's, I mean, I've gone through a lot of different phases since I started writing music, so it's different things at different times.
How would you define the current phase you're in?
I don't know. It's a good question. I can't put a label on. That's like one of the hardest things I think you can ask a musician is like to label their own.
Should we just hear one? Let's hear one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Do you have a name for this, or is it just...
No, all the tracks that I'm going to play today are basically like brand new, so I don't even have titles for them.
They haven't
been recorded. Yeah.
Oh, that new, not that old?
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, this is, we'll just call it track one, live on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
Thank you. awesome.
That makes me like want to go back to Montreal and stay out till the sun comes up in the winter. Type vibes. Taya?
I don't know. I'm having like a spiritual experience sitting here watching people eat at Roberta's listening to that.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. We'll give you a second to sit back. Yeah. Just prepping the next one?
Yeah.
Okay. We got time. It's internet radio. It's a little bit loose here.
It's a little loose on a Sunday.
Careful there. Well, that was great.
Thank you.
Where, besides, you know, early 80s AI movies, where else do you draw your inspiration
from? I really, before you answer that, I really hope you say nowhere. I wish that was like your one source. It's like, that's it.
Yeah. That's definitely a big influence. The whole period of like technology during the 80s, the sort of emergence of the internet, the vision of like where that would lead at that, like the sort of extrapolation of what the future would be like based on like what was happening in the 80s is an interesting like sort of inspirational material to draw from. But also constantly influenced by like contemporary things going on, and like there's a lot of inspiration because the world is just so fucked right now. So it's like we basically are in like the dystopian future. We're in like a very interesting conglomeration of like a lot of the dystopian futures that were like shown to us in sci-fi when we were growing up. It's more complicated because we've kind of opted into those dystopian futures, and like we've gotten benefits out of some of these pieces of technology that are also like, I don't know, they're kind of like, I mean, they're kind of insidious in a way, because like we do carry around cell phones everywhere we go, and I'll speak personally, they have hurt my memory for sure. I feel very dependent on them because I feel like it's almost like a prosthetic that I need to get around and do things now, because I just have grown so accustomed to using it. And then if you want to go further down, it's like they're also surveillance devices that, like, you know, based on like the stuff that's come out recently, thanks to Snowden, like we're carrying around surveillance devices like willingly at all times.
Yeah. I always wondered that if, like, because of the way that sci-fi was written, our mom was an avid sci-fi reader, that, like, they prepped us to go into this, where it's, like that self-fulfilling prophecy. Like,
How deep down the rabbit hole do you want to go down now?
But I'm serious. Like, had they not written about... They're like, oh, my God, it all came true. And you're like, well, who do you think the scientists were reading when they were young and impressionable? And, like, then they made... It's like there's a lot of connections for the things that were, like... created based on what was written about, and I think that had other things been written about, that's what would have come true.
Yeah, although just a point off of that real quickly, William Gibson, who, you know, is sort of coined the word cyberspace and one of the most prominent like cyberpunk sci-fi authors, he was asked like what he's like, because he gets a lot of credit for like sort of being very prescient about like seeing the internet and like the power of the network coming and writing about that. But he was asked like, what did you miss when you were writing those novels? And he's always like very embarrassed about it. He's like, there are no cell phones in any of those books. Like, he's like, I totally missed it. It's like, and it's probably the thing that has had the biggest impact on.
Is there no way like that people? I guess maybe I don't know, like that they converse with each other or just kind of chatted with each other. Or was it just kind of?
I think it was all through like computer. It's like through their decks, like, you know, through their like cyber decks or
That's okay. He called a lot.
Yeah, he
did.
You can
miss one.
And he's still writing great material that's like interesting because it's based in the current moment, but it still feels like sci-fi because so many things in our world are like the sci-fi we read when we were growing up now.
Yeah. Well, I think the best way to kind of run the show out is to let you kind of just get in there and not
just
give
do
you a time limit. But so we're going to close it out a little atypical to form, but
I'd rather you
just do your
thing. Go deep, then break it up into two parts. Does that work?
But so where can people find you? Where can people
Where are you playing?
Where are you playing next?
I don't have anything booked right now. I'm focused. At the moment, I'm like trying to write a lot of new material.
That new material.
Wait, and, not that old?
No, yeah.
That
new.
Wait. And basically like taking bookings as they come in. You can find me on SoundCloud, Null Sleep, Null Sleep on Twitter, Null Sleep with ones instead of L's on Instagram.
Whoever that asshole Null Sleep is.
Yeah.
Doesn't even post.
Who is he?
And who knows? Yeah. And nullsleep.com is my website.
Can I ask, when you're in your writing session and that type, like, what's your sustenance? What's fueling you for like food and drinks and things like that?
When I'm like working, stuff, basically like whatever is the fastest thing that I can eat and get back to work.
Space food,
pizza.
Pizza is quite often the answer.
Full circle, like a pizza pie, my friends.
Wow.
Pizza happens often.
Brain food right there.
I also have, in terms of like snack wave, I do have, I constantly have a bag of Warheads, candies in my studio.
Okay.
I love sour candies, and so there are always Warheads on hand.
I did not see that coming.
I like that.
That is a good answer. That is a,
I respect that.
The heat. Yeah. We need to bring the heat, right?
Yeah, that's respected. Well, thanks for coming by, Talia.
Yeah.
Welcome again to the family.
Thank you.
I can't wait to hear more of your program, especially how I can be educated on my pro snacking choices.
I'll have you guys in. We can talk.
Oh, that'd be me. I'm definitely happy to not be cutting out of work to come on your show.
Yeah.
Doctor's appointment.
Perfect.
Or meeting.
Pizza
uptown.
Doctor.
We will be back with another episode of Snacky Tunes next week. Please make sure to check out the Snacky Tunes Volume 5 live comp on the Heritage Radio Network.
And if you haven't
SoundCloud
yet become a donor to the Heritage Radio Network, please, please, please become a donor, especially for the holiday season. Keeps the lights on, keeps the pizza coming. It's a great gift.
All right. No Sleep.
Take us out. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.